inspiring, bold, progress, movement. These are just a few words that come to mind when I think about all of the collective action happening in the streets, on the picket lines, and on the shop floor. Working people in Oregon and across this country are fed up with a rigged economic system that isn't working for them, and they're doing something about it. Unions are gaining in popularity at levels not seen in 50 years. More workers are taking bold action at work than at any time since the 1980s. It's exciting, it's important, and it gives me a lot of hope for what working people can accomplish when we stand together. I'm Graham Traynor, Oregon AFL-CIO President, and you're listening to The Voice of Oregon's Workers, a monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO. As the State Federation of Labor Unions in Oregon, we proudly represent over 300,000 working people in every facet of our state's economy, and we serve as a strong voice for all workers, whether they have a union on the job or not. We're here to bring you the stories every month about the people and the organizations who are changing what it means to stand together and build power for working people.
We'll just go ahead and start. I'm Russell Sanders. I'm the Communications Director for the Oregon AFL-CIO. And for most of us, the U.S. Postal Service is a given in our daily lives. Our packages and mail arrive, our letters to family or checks to landlords go out on time. Unless there's a disruption to service, many never even give the Postal Service a second thought. But behind this efficient system are hundreds of thousands of hardworking people whose labor ensures our mail's expected arrival and departure from our homes and businesses. There are a number of unions who represent workers within the United States Postal Service, which has been a staple of our country since 1974. On this episode, we're focusing in on the National Association of Letter Carriers, a union that has been fighting for the rights of letter carriers since 1889. Representing over 284,000 active and retired letter carriers nationwide, with over 2,000 local branches, the NALC is everywhere, and every day we see their members working hard to keep our communities connected. The history of the NALC is fascinating and inspiring. From the general postal strike in New York City in 1970, calling out the Postal Service for poverty wages, to modern-day waves of organizing and mobilization around a wide range of issues, NALC members are an essential part of the American labor movement and our communities. But despite the prominence and sheer necessity of letter carriers, federal legislation poses near-constant threats to the rights of NALC members and other postal employees. This legislation directly impacts their working conditions, dignity, and respect on the job. In my 10 years in Oregon's labor movement, I cannot count the number of petitions, rallies, marches, and actions I've seen to support letter carriers and postal workers. In fact, one of the first projects I had at the Oregon AFL-CIO was drafting a letter to Congress opposing egregious prepayment of retirement funds, a complex issue that we'll get into later on this episode. So let's jump into the discussion. I'll have our guests today introduce themselves. Please tell us who you are, your role in your union, and how long you've been doing this work. We'll start with Suzanne.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Miller. I've been a letter carrier for 6 years, and I'm going into my fourth term as steward, and I'm the newly elected editor of the B-Mic.
That's amazing. And what's that publication that you're an editor
That's
of?
That's the newsletter, our cool. union's newsletter.
Well, yeah. Great to have you.
Thank you.
My name is David Norton. I'm the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers, Branch 82. This is my second term as president. Before that, I was our chief steward, so the head grievance officer of Branch 82. So I've been a full-time officer for 6 years. I've been a postal employee for 15 years. Before becoming an officer, I was a shop steward at Rose City Park Station, where I did most of my career as carrying mail.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much and welcome to our podcast. I touched on the federal legislation efforts underway a little bit in the introduction, but I'm hoping to hear more from you two about them. What is currently happening? What's currently underway?
There are several bills in the House.
Federal level.
There are several bills in the House and the Senate right now. Most importantly, H.R. 2382, the USPS Fairness Act, that would repeal the pre-funding mandate that was imposed upon the Postal Service in 2006. What you spoke about briefly in your intro, that certainly is the most important to us. It just passed the House, and now there is a Senate Bill 2382, which mimics the USPS Fairness Act bill in the House. So we're hoping that we can get bipartisan support and repeal the pre-funding mandate.
Great.
I would just add that we have the Letter Carrier Political Fund, and so I try to raise awareness for that and get people to sign up. The difficulty there is that we can't discuss it on the clock.
Which is our PAC.
Usually we are on the clock when we see each other, so that's a challenge. But we use that money to support candidates who support us.
That's fantastic. Yeah, definitely an important thing for union members to put their efforts behind. But yeah, lack of ability to talk about it on a work site makes it a little bit tricky. So I want to drill down a little bit into the pre-funding of retirement, because it's complex. And David, like you said, it's something we've been fighting since, what, 2006?
Yes.
It's just yet another example of, I think, budgets being balanced on the backs of working people. What's the story with the pre-funding?
So in 2006, the lame duck Republican-controlled House passed the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. Now, what that did was it forced the Postal Service to pre-fund their retirees and future retirees decades into the future. Now, what that means is that they had to pre-fund the health benefits for employees that were currently on the rolls and employees that currently weren't even working for the Postal Service at that time. And so that accounted to over $5.2 billion a year, something that hasn't happened with any other company before or after. What happened after 2006? During 2006, the Postal Service is, moving along. Our profits are strong. Then the housing market crashes. The Great Recession sets in. And all of a sudden, there's a drop in first-class mail. And starting in 2007, the Postal Service starts accruing massive losses because of this pre-funding mandate. Hmm. So, 92% of the Postal Service's losses, are because of this pre-funding mandate that was imposed upon us. 100% of the losses are attributed to this mandate over the last 6 years. So if the Postal Service didn't have to pay this money to pre-fund its future retiree health benefits, they would have been in the black. Almost they would have weathered the storm of the housing crisis and the Great Recession, and we would have posted a profit almost every single year.
It's worth pointing out that the Postal Service requires no taxpayer funds, right?
Yes.
It's completely self-sufficient. Yeah.
Yeah. Completely self-sufficient. No tax dollars go to any kind of, that's something we hear as letter carriers all the time. Like, my taxes go to your salary. And that's not true. No tax dollars go to the running of the Postal Service.
That's fascinating. And I think it's an example of, we don't see the connection between a change in federal law and the frontline workers who are directly impacted by these laws. What's it like on the shop floor and on the mail routes for letter carriers right now?
Well, I would say that management tries to compensate for this monetary shortfall by coming up with creative, in quotes, ideas and programs to save money. And these programs are often at the expense of the worker, unfortunately. They lead to longer hours and worse conditions, which in fact don't save money in the end, I don't think. And they can lead to more people quitting, which leads to major staffing problems. That can lead to attendance discipline. I've just had 17 cases of attendance discipline in my office.
Wow.
And we just have 44 routes. So that was really big. And that was all people just calling in sick. They weren't out.
Sure.
Doing anything crazy. They were just calling in sick. And so then it makes them a little bit angry that they feel like they can't use their own sick leave benefit. And it kind of leads to people quitting in the end, especially the new people. And then it's the cycle where they have to start with a whole new workforce. So they're spending money on investing in all these new employees.
I think that's the main point is that it's kind of, I called it like the source of the river of bad ideas. It starts with, this idea that they should be spending money on their networks instead of trying to shrink to survive.
Yeah.
And that's what the Postal Service is doing. Instead of trying to spend money to innovate, to buy new vehicles, we desperately need a new fleet of vehicles. The Postal Service still has this albatross, hanging around its neck of, $5.2 billion a year. So we're, the Postal Service is really the most profitable bankrupt company that is out there.
Well put. That's fascinating to me. And I think another thing that's interesting is how NALC mobilizes and organizes members. It's truly impressive. And what a lot of folks might not realize is that as federal workers, you're operating as open shops, right? Where members, letter carriers are not automatically joined into a branch of the NALC upon hire.
That's correct.
They have to be organized. They have to be convinced to sign a card, and it takes some work. How do you deal with that? What kind of strategies have you found to be effective in an open shop environment?
Well, honestly, the Postal Service is the best recruiter for our membership because how they treat their employees a lot of times. But honestly, and I'd like to say that, we do a great job of supporting our members locally. We're 97% organized locally, 93% organized nationally.
Wow.
And I think that's due to just the quality of representation our members get. But honestly, the NALC has done a very good job of collectively bargaining to be part of a carrier's day-to-day life. We have control over our safety programs. We have control over our training programs. So when a carrier is hired, it is a union letter carrier that is training them that we've had a say in. When they go to the station to get their on-the-job training, that is a union letter carrier training that a new employee that we've had a say in. And it's really important, it's a major fight and with a lot of unions nowadays with apprenticeship programs. It's important to the future of your craft to have a craft employee and a union member being the one that's training them. So not only are we the people that you go to when you get into trouble, right? A lot of people just view it as that, but honestly, we are the people you go to with every aspect of your job. So I think that's important in retaining our membership.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the example of making sure the right people are training your letter carriers as they come in to show them the importance of the union. We're seeing a similar push in the public sector right now, following the fallout of the Supreme Court case, Janus v. AFSCME.
Yeah.
The new employee orientation, getting in while folks are, making it as essential to the part of their first day as signing their tax forms, is getting that union card in their hand and explaining to them the value. It's so crucial.
Yep.
Another way that letter carriers are crucial to our to the labor movement is through participation in political field programs. And for folks who did not know about this, the Oregon AFL-CIO, we operate the largest nonpartisan voter engagement program in the state. Letter carriers are a critical part of that work. By volunteering, we'll have letter carriers at almost every event that we have during political season, but also through release time, when workers come off the shop floor to work on a political campaign. In recent years, however, there's been a push from anti-worker elements within the federal government to prevent the practice of release timers. That is saying that unions, you cannot do this anymore. We're not going to allow you to release your own members to go work on politics. What's up with that? Why are we seeing unions being hamstrung to release members to work on political campaigns?
Well, it's difficult. I've worked on multiple campaigns in the past, but lately there has been this push to not allow people to be let off to work for any kind of political campaigns. And, it's different for the Postal Service because, we are federal employees and we are under Hatch Act restrictions.
Ah.
So that means technically we can't take part in partisan politics. We can't run for, partisan office. We can't, certainly do things on the clock, but even off the clock, there are certain restrictions. So it's difficult for letter carriers and as well as all federal employees to take part in the political process. We find ways to do it, but you've had to become craftier and craftier over the years. And I think it's just because there has been lately a push to not allow union members to be let off the clock to take part in the political process.
Certainly, yeah. Do you have anything you want to
add? I just had a little joke in my office
about
that. I told them they can complain about the political mail we had to deliver the day before, but that's it. You got to stop because
the Hatch Act?
No, the debate. the Democrat debate had been on the night before.
Oh.
And so, you know, I heard some people talking about it, and they just can't, unfortunately.
You can't even talk about
it? Just to leave it alone. Because it leads to, it can lead to something that, if one person gets offended, it can get ugly.
Right, right.
That. Okay, sure.
Interesting. Well, you know, speaking of politics, we are one of the few states where folks can vote by mail. It's fantastic. How do you feel about that? Knowing that not only are NALC members delivering essential things like prescriptions, but you're literally delivering democracy in Oregon. Clearly, I'm a huge fan of this. What's it like for you and your membership?
I love to deliver on ballot day. It's one of my favorite days to work because, yeah, it's like you said, it feels really important. Some people complain about it. It's really a hard day. It's usually twice the mail as usual. But I like to be the regular on the route that day. It's one of my favorite days, like I said, because I know where the forwards go. And I feel like I'm really doing my part to get this important mail where it needs to be.
And that's the day that you actually deliver the ballots to folks' homes. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, and the actual ballot measures, that's a heavy day.
That's a
thick book sometimes in the satchel. But I think it's also important to, you know, to look at, you know, when we talk about the postal like network, we do have like forwarding services. Most letter carriers know who the residents are at, you know, at the houses that they deliver. So they know if this ballot goes to this house, and there is a process if it doesn't go that we can return it, you know, for fairness in elections. You know, the postal service has, you know, has these processes already set up to take care of ballots.
All right. So we're going to shift gears a little bit here. The change to how mail is used in our economy, it's been gigantic over the past few decades. 69% of Americans have shopped online, and a quarter of our nation buys something over the internet at least once a month. How has this rise in online consumerism translated into your workloads? It's not uncommon to see letter carriers delivering Amazon packages on Sunday now, for example.
It has definitely changed the job from less office time to more street time. So, and with that, I think comes a lot more physicality with the job.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't there 15 or 20 years ago and beyond, so I wasn't there when I've heard your arms hurt from all the stacks of mail, which true. I get, because there's when you have a lot of magazines.
Oh, sure.
Its own sort of pain. But yeah, we're doing UPS packages now also, which means not only our CCAs are working on Sundays, but also our overtime desired list regulars. And that's new. So some of them are having to get used to that.
So CCAs are city carrier assistants. They're our newest employees. And ODL carriers are the overtime list carriers.
Right.
Just for your listeners.
Translate.
The professional jargon.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, sure.
Lots of jargon.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we're delivering more and more packages, you know, not just on Sundays. And like Suzanne brought up, delivering UPS packages, that's something new. We're also delivering UPS on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
So not just Amazon, but UPS. So packages are getting more on Sunday, but they're getting more every single day. And that's just part of this whole e-commerce reality that we're living in. And the Postal Service is really set up well to deliver these packages. You know, we go to every single house every single day. It's, you know, as long as we have the staffing to cover, and that's, you know, a big if, but then, you know, we're happy to take that work.
Has that increased workload added to like the burden that a shop steward has in terms of processing grievances and doing that other important work of maintaining the contract?
Well, I mean, there's more delivery days. We went from basically 6-day mail delivery to 7 days, and that seventh day is, you know, some of our newest employees just delivering packages. You know, with more packages comes more scanning, with more scanning comes more,
that's true.
You know,
yeah.
So like there's just, you know, we have more going on now than we ever have. And so as far as getting your time in right now, you know, we have to have the staffing to meet these extra demands with this increase in parcels. So, you know, with a lack of staffing comes a lack of time to get your work done. You know, comes with more of a fight to get your steward time. Now, we have a right to steward time on the clock. You know, management likes to try and push us with that. And of course, we're very successful with pushing back, but certainly it makes it harder to get your work done.
Yeah, and when you said scanning, that's a trigger, of course, because a lot of people think we just show up at the office, get our mail, then go for a walk for the next 7 hours. But with all the packages, you know, we have this new load truck feature. We're supposed to scan the packages in. We're scanning the packages out. We have different scans on the street. And if we miss some, then that's another reason for them to call us in for attendance. And that was another thing a few months ago where people didn't even know they needed to make these scans. And we had, I don't know, 12 people, quote unquote, in trouble about that. And
oh my gosh.
So that was a big,
well, the post office is big on transparency. So, I mean, like, that's, you know, for their customer, which is important, you know, you can, so it's all about scanning this packages.
So. Scan everything.
And you said 7 hours of walking a day. What kind of a toll does that take on you?
You need good inserts, good shoes.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
But are like hip and knee replacements common as letter carriers kind of age out of their careers?
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, a lot of, if you're a letter carrier and you have not been injured on the job, consider yourself very, very lucky.
Wow.
It's, we have, the injury rate is very high for letter carriers, and it's, you know, it's the wear and tear for a lot of people. Sometimes it's just slip, trips, and falls. Sometimes it's, you know, you're bending, you're stooping, you're picking heavy things up. The potential to become injured on the job is very high.
Yeah, especially in a slippery place like Portland where it's always wet here.
Absolutely.
And dog bites are real.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that... I'm not a dog person. I can't imagine that. are there still efforts underway federally to get rid of six-day mail?
I mean, sure, there are. There are less so. I mean, we don't hear the fight over it. But, yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, that's always on the table of getting rid of six-day delivery.
Okay.
I mean, it seems crazy. I mean, we've gone to seven-day delivery.
Yeah.
You know, that seventh day being just parcel delivery. But clearly we need more time to get the work done than less. So.
Yeah, I mean, how would that impact your customers if you were to reduce days or further, you know, constrain your workloads?
Well, you know, we don't like to use the phrase junk mail, but customers do. And they like to tease me about, you just bring me junk mail, but they're always waiting for me every day. And a lot of them have their informed delivery, which is an email you can get daily that tells you what to expect in your box. And they get that email and they want to see it in my hand. And there's that aspect, but there's also just checking on our elders and that sort of thing.
Well, I think you brought up, you know, delivering prescriptions. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear a lot of that first class mail is declining, but the reality is that people still depend on first class mail, and there is value in first class mail or even in standard mail, and our customers are looking for that.
They are. And we're so busy the day after holiday.
Sure.
You know, where it's always going to be a long, hard day. So I just can't imagine. If we didn't have mail on Sunday, Saturday and Sunday, Monday would be a lot to catch up on every week for sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're more tired with a higher workload, then those injuries are going to be more common. And, yeah, absolutely. It's definitely part of a whole equation. So one thing that we haven't really touched on, although Suzanne, you did a little bit by talking about, you know the people on your route, you know your customers, which I just think is fantastic. And it's the role an ALC members play within the community. How do your members put that value on display? What are letter carriers up to that make our communities a better place to live in?
Letter carriers are out there every single day in the community. And, you know, it's really a part of the job that, I mean, being able to work and live in many cases in the community that you're servicing is what makes being a letter carrier, in my opinion, special. And so, you know, there's people every year that, you know, save their customers' lives. You know, the NELC has the hero awards that go out to, you know, people that, you know, to do that every single year. I'm sure we all have a story. I mean, I personally called the fire department when seeing smoke in a customer's house.
Oh, wow.
And they had left, you know, they'd left a pot of beans on the stove. And I, you know, but I mean, we all have stories like that. You know, it's what I'm most proud of, really, with our union, with all the, you know, fighting with management and our fights with, in, you know, on the federal level is that, you know, that we take time for charity, and the NALC is heavily involved in, you know, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and, you know, over, I don't know, you know, we've raised over $20 million just in the last 10 years alone to support children and adults with, you know, research services for people living with muscular dystrophies. You know, we have the largest 1 day food drive in the nation with the Stamp Out Hunger food drive. We're hoping for 1 million pounds of food collected here locally that goes to, you know, that goes to the community. And certainly letter carriers, you know, see the need for this food because they're out in the community every single day. Suzanne kind of touched on it, but we have a program called the Carrier Alert Program, which is a voluntary program where you can, you know, ask your letter carrier to kind of look after maybe an elderly loved one and see if, you know, maybe the mail's piling up, maybe the lights are on and it's, you know, and it's midday, maybe the dog is, you know, barking or, you know, whining at the door. And, you know, maybe there's some reason to contact, you know, the authorities. You know, we also have the, in 2018, we started the Carrier Relief Fund. You know, every year all across this country, there's droughts, there's floods, and it impacts communities that letter carriers live and deliver mail to. So, you know, we've started this program where we can identify these places' needs and send letter carriers there to try and assist with, you know, whatever help we can do to, you know, places, you know, that are flood ravaged because of wildfires, just different natural disasters that happen all over this country. The NALC has got their hands in all kinds of charitable activities, and yeah, it's what I'm most proud of, really.
Cool. Well, we're going to start wrapping it up here. The last question, and I just want to make sure our listeners hear this directly from you both, is what can we do as Oregon's labor movement, as working people, to help support the NALC and the fight for dignity and respect for letter carriers?
I would ask you to please reward good behavior. I think that people are quick to leave a bad review,
mm-hmm.
but it's nice if you can take that minute to make a phone call or write a note if you see your letter carrier providing excellent service.
Yeah,
I think it'd be great to let management know, and if you let your carrier know, they're just, it's just going to end there because
mm-hmm.
they're not going to go brag it up. But you know, that at Christmas time they have the commercial with the letter carrier standing on the porch, they're ringing the doorbell, they're waiting for the customer to answer, and they hand over the package and they're smiling, but actually they just want you to scan it on the way up and drop it and maybe knock and run. And but people like it when you hand their package to them. And I like to, especially for older people, if I have a heavy package, I don't want to leave it visible on the porch. I want to wait for them to answer the door and hand it to them. So if that happens to you, why not take a minute to applaud that behavior?
Absolutely.
Be nice to your letter carrier.
Yeah. Nice to learn.
I mean, I want to put the word out about the pre-funding mandate. Certainly all of our, you know, representatives here in Oregon have signed on to.
Oh, great.
Onto the USPS Fairness Act. The Senate bill is fairly new, but we're expecting our senators to also sign on.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of know the background of what is, you know, kind of happening on the federal level with the Postal Service. It is not a bankrupt company. You know, there is no need to privatize the Postal Service. You know, when we talk about, you know, privatizing the Postal Service, we're talking about taking away an institution that has been around longer than this country has been around. And you know, delivering a first-class letter anywhere in the continental United States or anywhere in the United States for 55 cents is still the best deal around.
That's right.
And so, and it's the people's postal service. It's our postal service. It's your postal service. And it's worth protecting, and it's worth keeping, innovating, and, you know, making it part of our everyday life.
Well, David, Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us today. And if you're enjoying this podcast, make sure to leave a positive review, just like you're going to be doing for your letter carrier from now on. And check back next month for another podcast episode from the Voice of Oregon's Workers. Thank you so much.